Hey, this is Evan Murray. You're listening to Music Industry Insights. You can get a hold of me at evan@musicindustryins.net. evan@musicindustryins.net. Hong Kong. What is going to happen with Hong Kong? Well, we didn't get too political in this podcast. We kept it on the up and up, just literally about the independent music scene there and what the underground does in Hong Kong. We talked a little bit about the pandemic, but we tried to focus more on the kind of events and things that underground has done in the past and what can come in the future, because that's what we always want to talk about, right? We want to qualify what people are doing or what they have done. And we want to talk about how things can get bigger and better and all that good stuff. So Hong Kong is an interesting place because it's like, you know, it's like its own little place made up of, I can't remember if it's 9 islands or something. And then you have like Macau that's just like, you know, 40-minute drive away, but it turns into a whole different world. And of course, it's on, you know, this is all inside of China, right? So geopolitically, yes, you know, it's very complicated, obviously. I don't really know enough to talk about it in any immersive way or any, you know, educational way. But in this conversation, we absolutely talked about the gamut of the music industry in Hong Kong and Chris's involvement there. Chris is a very energetic person. She's very passionate about the music industry, about being a part of the music industry. She's very active on the global scene as well. And I think that, you know, her head and her heart are in the right place when it comes to wanting to expand the opportunities for artists in Hong Kong. I think she cares about her home and she cares about the people that, you know, want more opportunity, let's say, outside of Hong Kong. And of course, for people that want opportunity inside of Hong Kong. Now, I spent 10 days in Hong Kong last year. And I guess it wouldn't be last year because of the pandemic. But regardless, I absolutely love Hong Kong. I think it is such an amazing city. I absolutely love that there's all these islands around it too. Like, I love that. You can like pay like $2 USD or $3 USD or something, and you can actually go to all these different islands. And it's like, you can take this like super fast, like boat, like ferries that like travel above the water, or you can take these like big slow ferries, you know, if you want more sightseeing or whatever. But when you come out of the harbor, it's like super beautiful. Like, you got the city, you got the mountains. Like, I mean, Hong Kong is a like amazingly beautiful place. Like, it is amazing. And the architecture there is crazy. I can't say enough good things about Hong Kong. I can't. Like, I loved it there. I loved it so much. And I just, this whole pandemic thing and then the riots and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just, I just keep hoping that I live long enough that I can go back to a place like Hong Kong. You know, I can go back to New York. I can go back to Tokyo. I can go back to Kyiv. I can go back to all these different places. I can go back and see all of my true great friends in India. And of course, see, you know, family and friends in Canada and all of those good things that life has to offer. So, without further ado, take what you can from this, extract what you need, and enjoy it. Welcome to Hong Kong, baby.
How's it going, Chris? Woo!
It's good, it's good. It's raining here in Hong Kong today, so yeah.
Okay.
It's a wet one.
Let's dive right in. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing. Like, you have a company called The Underground. What's that all about?
Yeah, so it's been going 17 years, goodness. So basically, it was post post-SARS when the music scene was dead, and we kind of thought that, you know, people want to see bands and original music. It wasn't something intentionally set up for, you know, to go on for years and to support the community or anything. It just turned into that. Like, you know, when the community needs something, people go, hey, you're going to still keep doing these shows, Chris, right? And so, although it's been quite restrictive this year and last year, we're still up to 280 odd shows in the last 17 years promoting original music. Okay. Mostly Hong Kong bands, but we've worked with a number of like international acts that come through here.
Okay, excellent. And so you yourself, you sound like you have a British accent. Are you originally, are you from Hong Kong? Or are you from England?
I'm from Hong Kong, from when it was a British colony. My dad was English. My mother was Chinese. So okay. I'm mixed.
Okay. I mean, that's really interesting because I mean, the whole entire British Hong Kong connection. I mean, that's really super interesting. So you were growing up now. When we talk about music influences, tell me a little bit about, because you're a musician yourself, are you still playing in a band now?
Not at the moment, but I hope to be again soon in the future. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I play guitar and I sing.
Performing is still much of your, I guess, drive or your passion. Motivation. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me about like growing up in Hong Kong. I mean, I've been to Hong Kong. I loved it. I absolutely loved the city of Hong Kong. I fell in love. I was there for, I think, like the first time 10 days and I think another time 2.5 weeks. And I absolutely love it there. It's absolutely beautiful. I had no idea how actually gorgeous it was around the whole area.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But I love it too.
talk to me about like growing up and your influences. So, you know, not just like internationally, but was there music going on in Hong Kong that was inspired, like kind of influencing you as well?
Wow, that's a really detailed question. I mean, although it was a British colony, it was very much more influenced by American music and the American charts, especially in the 80s and the 90s. Yeah. So, and like on TV and stuff, it would be American programs rather than British. So,
really? You know,
solid gold rather than say Pop of the Pops, right? The UK one. So the music was kind of a bit weird here.
Really surprising, actually. I didn't know that. So thank you for that tidbit. And secondly, that's really kind of surprising. I mean, I know America had huge influences all over the world, but to hear that it, you know, in a British colony on, you know, in China, basically, that you're getting more American influence than you are British. So yeah, please continue.
Yeah. And like in the, I think 60s, 70s, 80s, a lot of the big stars here would take a famous pop song by, say, Madonna or someone else, put Chinese lyrics onto it, Cantonese, and then release them. It wasn't till kind of like the 90s onward that people started writing music, right? Original music, not just the lyrics, but the content, songwriting and stuff. So I've seen it kind of change over the years. I would, I mean, it's really, this is a very detailed answer. Someone actually sent me their thesis that was like 100 pages long about indie music in Hong Kong recently. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, because, Hong Kong does have its own character for sure, you know, and that's kind of what I want to kind of dig in a little bit about, you know, your life there and, you know, with the music scene there, because it definitely has its own character, you know, like when I was there, it was identifiably not anywhere else. You know, like I was like, part of the weird thing was like, you know, part of the architecture is actually very much like when you land in Vancouver, Canada, you have the same type of architecture, which is, I mean, I was just like so blown away because Vancouver is like oceanic and also mountainous as well. So Hong Kong and Vancouver, I think, have a, I know there was a huge surplus of immigrants in the 70s or whatever, but yeah, they do share a lot of, at least, scenic you know, qualities. So
you just reminded me of a brilliant memory. Because my mom's Chinese, like she was one of 15 children. So one of my uncles lived in Vancouver. So I went over in the 90s. He's Chinese, obviously. And I spent a few weeks with him. And honestly, I didn't go anywhere where people didn't speak Cantonese.
Yeah, that's very true.
Like,
there are.
It's like, oh my God. Like, people, it's like being in Hong Kong in Canada.
Yeah.
So it was a really novel experience. Yeah,
it really is. I mean, Canada, just to mention, is like that. Like, if you go into the Chinatowns in Canada, like, you will encounter people that don't speak English 100%. I mean, Canada is kind of it's not so much a melting pot like the United States. Like, people really kind of keep their own culture in Canada too, for the most part. I mean, that's a real generalization, but.
So
when was the transition? Like, when was the transition for you? So like, you're growing up, you're being influenced by American music, you know, I'm assuming like rock and roll, punk rock. I mean, what kind of musics were, sorry, musics. what kind of artists were kind of pulling at you? Like, what kind were really inspiring you?
Oh, I got really into like British music. I really adored The Clash.
Oh, cool.
David Bowie, The Smiths. Echo and the Bunnymen. Okay. I really loved stuff like that. It was really cool. And in the 90s, I was in an all-girl band called Sisters of Sharon here, right? And that was when I started to explore my own city's scene and play shows all over the place and meet bands and musicians and do the hard grafting as an indie musician.
So let's talk about that. Let's touch on that. So you're playing in the scene, and was there a scene when you were playing in it, or were you part of a development, or how, tell me about that experience.
I think there was more of a disconnect. I don't know what to say. There'd be like the local Chinese sort of grungy, metally, undergroundy sort of vibe. And then there was like the expatty. do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
so because I look Western, but I speak fluent Cantonese. So and we did some songs in Cantonese as well because I could. So we could cross that bridge, but still, because of the way you look, people will judge you for the way you look, right? But still, it was nice to be, and being all girls, you were also more likely to be, you know, we were very young and we were all good looking.
Attention was on you, right?
Do you know what I mean? Girls like to see girls, guys like to see girls, right? In an all-girl band. So it was, you know, we weren't so good at the beginning, to be honest, but we were together 10 years. And I have to say, without boasting, we were really good at the end. And we had like, you know, like we could play a whole night with, you know, three or four sets, like mostly originals, maybe a few covers that we liked. And we got to meet a lot of bands and play all over the place, everywhere. At that point, we played everywhere possible you could in Hong Kong.
Okay. And so the thing is like, okay, so I wanted to, there's a lot of content coming at you here. So so you're in the scene, you're playing the scene, you're meeting lots of people, you're doing lots of shows. Do you start to see, hey, like there's a gap missing here? Like somebody needs to be supporting bands, booking bands, or how did the transition start happening to you where you started getting more as a promoter, you know, musician / promoter? How did that transition happen?
Yeah, that was actually around the last year, because that band was together from 91 to 2001, right? So... and in 2000, it was Earth Day or something. And this guy said, Toby said, hey, can you come and organize the bands? You know, loads of bands. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, like, and obviously when you look back, I was the one booking the gigs. Like, you know, I'd be in those days, it was phone calls, right?
I'm like, what is this thing you're doing? Like if some 12-year-old sees you like that, they're going to think, you know.
Yeah, they have no idea. You're right. It was phone calls like, can we play this gig? And I remember faxing our poster to people, like in the media, as you know, when we were press releasing, like, right. And we used to actually, that band, we used to have a physical newsletter that we would make and then photocopy and then put into envelopes and send to our fans all over the world. Right. It was very unenvironmentally friendly, I have to say, but, there you go.
Well, and you know, the other thing too, like mm-hmm. being in some of the other East Asian countries, like Hong Kong has a certain style about it that's very influential, you know, like it's very influential in Taiwan, especially. I mean, like you have clothing stores and food stores that are like specifically Hong Kong, like Hong Kongese or whatever kind of thing.
Right.
And also I've seen it in like Hong Kong style and fashion plays a part in Japanese culture and, you know, maybe mm-hmm. even a little bit in South Korean and definitely in Southeastern. So there's I found it like a very urban kind of stylization with mixed with like skateboards and British flags and, you know, this kind of really urban kind of culture. Like talk to me about that. Talk to me about the music culture in Hong Kong that you were experiencing, like more so moving into the future, like when you were full on promoting now and such.
Yeah. So even when I was in that band, I could see there was a disconnect. And I have to say, it still happens to a certain extent. There's little pockets. And I get it, right? The older I get people want to fit in and identify with a group of people like them, right? So I do get how that happens. But it's such a small place and with so few venues, if we're so cliquey, we don't get the chance to play more and actually maybe earn new fans or a new audience, right? So I started the underground in 2004, as I said, an accident. We were just like, oh, we've got a new band. New bands only have 15, 20 minutes of material. It wasn't like my previous band that could play for hours, right? So we're like, we'll need to find other bands, other new bands that want to play with us, right? And then it snowballed, right? And we thought, and our website actually, from the very first show, we said, let's be like Q Magazine. It was this British magazine that doesn't exist anymore. Let's review the bands playing at the event. So, and of course, 284 shows later, we have hundreds of bands reviews on our website. So it was, not since COVID, but at some point, it was like a Bible. It's like, oh, I want to see this band. Let's see what the underground review is.
Us about that website. Where do we find it and what kind of content is on there?
It's undergroundhk.com. So, yeah, it's so we review all the bands from every show. And I have to confess, in the first year or so, our reviewers weren't very serious.
Fair enough.
Because we didn't know, right? We didn't know it was going to be. You know, years down the line, it was just something we did for fun. And everyone, in fact, everyone who works and involved in the underground are still very passionate about the music scene. Everyone who reviews now, they're real journalists.
It's like, quote unquote.
yeah. But it's nice. Right. It's nice to see the. And some bands obviously have played more than once at the underground, and you get to see their development as well. Like, because unfortunately, many bands just come together, play for a short time, and fizzle out. Where, you know,
Would you consider the undergroundhk.com? Would that be like a hub for Hong Kong music scene?
It's one of the hubs. Okay. I don't want to say it's, you know. Okay. We have a great classified ad section, which turns out it's the most popular page on our site because bands like probably in Taiwan as well, there's a lot of people who come in, come out, stay here for a few years and leave again. So people will be like, oh, I'm going to form a jazz band. I need a bassist. Or, you know, I'm doing, you know, rock and roll. I need a drummer. And like many, many bands have said to me, we met through your website, you know, which is really nice to hear that we can offer this solution to people looking for musicians to play with.
Now I'm going to ask you a little bit of geography. Like what's the population of Hong Kong?
I think it's something like seven and a half million.
So how do you, like, does Macau count with that? Like, what are the regions of your whole area there? Like, you have, I know it's like broken up islands, right? Because I went to it like that. One of the most amazing things I found about Hong Kong is I can go to all these islands from the ferries. I just, you know, 15 minutes to this island, 15 minutes to that island. I think there's like nine of them or something.
There's actually a couple of hundred, but the ones that people live on, there's like the one you land at the airport now is Lantau Island. And then there's Lama Island, Chung Chow, Peng Chow. They're kind of the main ones. There's an island with a prison on it. So,
wow. Okay, I didn't know that.
Oh, many too. I don't quote me. But yeah, it is nice. And what was the previous question? I'm sorry.
So yeah, so the like when we talk about Hong Kong as an area, like is it 7.5 million in the area in those islands? Does that include that?
No, I think
you're talking about the metropolis itself, right? Like,
well, I'm talking about the whole of Hong Kong, Kowloon and New Territories and the islands. Okay. Macau only has something like 600,000 people, right? It's
a huge difference.
Yeah, that's huge. So, outside, I can see how people lump us together, but Macau have their own currency and since COVID it's been they've only got 600,000 people, so their number of cases are minuscule, so they've been very, very strict on who they let in, including people from Hong Kong, because we kept having waves. I mean, we're okay at the moment, but yeah. So I mean, there's an interesting music scene in Macau as well too, and I know the people. I actually did a few underground Macau's or Macau underground. I can't remember which way we worded it. I worked with a university guy based in a university there. And that was quite good. We'd bring a band from Hong Kong and play with Macanese bands. But that only lasted for a couple of years. It's a bit of a palaver. You don't have to bring your passport, but it's still traveling to another zone. And it still costs money to travel and it takes time. Okay. And yeah.
So, like, Hong Kong is an area. Say I'm a band and I'm like, Hong Kong seems so cool to me. And is it a place where you can develop as an artist, or is it a place where you just stop off as an artist and keep going on tour? Like, how do you consider that?
Oh, that's a really hard question.
Yeah.
I mean, before COVID, it was quite healthy with like indie bands stopping off here, like on their way into mainland China. Yeah, it was quite, you know, they would do it because many times they'd have to come through Hong Kong anyway. But then it kind of got cheaper to land in Shenzhen or even in Macau rather than actually Hong Kong. Mm. So some people would miss Hong Kong. So it depends. You need a promoter here. Right, you need someone promoting you because they don't know you. I'm sure it's the same in all other cities. They don't know you, who you are and what you're about. And yeah, if there's no one promoting you.
Well, I think that's pretty safe information. You know, it's very smart because, I mean, the thing is, one thing I've been talking about, and hopefully the conversations go further and further with, you know, export offices around the world, is that there's not really a medium anymore, and we have to identify that. You know, like one person can have a hit song on one radio station, and then the radio station 50 miles down the road doesn't even know who you are. You know, like it's not, the world just isn't the same anymore. And I think part of the solution for export offices when they go into these showcase conferences or land in other countries and such is they have to be working with companies that are well established. You know, like they have to find the people on the ground, people that can, you know, set up the interview, set up the festival, set up the shows, you know, like this just has to start being something that they're practicing, because kind of spending a whole bunch of money to send a bunch of people over to a country for a weekend, it's just the most nonsensical thing I've ever thought of or heard of in my whole entire life. Like it's almost stupid. Like it, you know, I mean, I just got to say it straight. So
And I've done that, by the way, the whole stupid thing you said.
A lot of people have, right?
Yeah.
Because it's just how we understand things. Like, it's like, oh, so I'll just blow like, you know, 10 grand and go to this place and hope something happens. Is that the plan? Oh, that's the plan. You know, I was like, okay, yeah, good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? But I guess they're, you know, smarter bands, instead of making that mistake, can learn from you and I.
So are you guys, cut that out. Is there a export element in Hong Kong? Like, are you guys working as a, like a company who's also seeking opportunity for bands outside of Hong Kong as well?
Yeah, yeah, we can. We definitely want to look at that. Although there generally hasn't been that much opportunity, I would say. Yeah, okay. It's. Maybe like Asia, right? Because it's small and it's close. I mean, this is all pre-COVID, but I mean, at one point. Was it 10 years ago? Yeah, 10 years ago, I was working with a Japanese promoter and we were actually going to swap bands. But unfortunately, the day the two Japanese bands turned up was the same day of the earthquake. And then, you know, March the 11th, 2001, right? Or 2011, sorry, not 20 years, 10 years. And literally the band arrived and then this happened and they lost contact with their family. And my show was called Japan Rocks.
Okay. 9.1. So, that was one of the biggest earthquakes on earth, right? Like, that was massive.
Yeah, but that was very bad luck for me in every sense. And of course we couldn't continue. The next thing was he sent two bands. They carried on into Shenzhen and played the shows because we had a little, because obviously they didn't just come to Hong Kong. They came Hong Kong, Shenzhen, Guangzhou, and then went back to Japan. But we couldn't go back the other way because of this earthquake and all this. Yeah. So that kind of freaked me out. So I didn't do anything for a while. But certainly bands get very excited about the opportunity. I mean, I've worked with Branded, you know, the people who do Music Matters in Singapore. That's like a conference.
I know the Singapore Export Office, and I am aware of that, but I don't know them personally. But yeah, I know, I've heard of Jasper a lot since I've been working with Canadian Music Week. He's really good with the people at Canadian Music Week there. I don't actually know him personally yet.
I do. And the first festival they did was actually here in Hong Kong. The last year they had the conference here in Hong Kong, and I organized that festival. They moved it. Yeah, that was in 2010, and then they moved it to Singapore the next year. So bands did enjoy going to Singapore, but even then, you know, it was interesting. Like, some bands really take their music and career seriously. I really like working with those bands, I have to say. And then there are some bands that think they take themselves seriously. But am I allowed to swear on this?
Absolutely. You can do whatever you want. Yeah.
But they piss me off. That's not too heavy, right? You know, there was one band, because they obviously, the conference in Singapore would say, oh, look, you know, this band and this band and this band applied to come. Do you think they would represent your city and they're serious? And one band I thought was serious. I said, I think they, I mean, I did think they were good. They played one of my shows recently. Da, 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 da. And then when I was at the conference, I messaged them going, where are you? This is a really interesting panel. You should be here. This is about how to find, I don't know, whatever it was, right? Publisher, whatever. And they said, we're just sightseeing.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what do you mean you're sightseeing? No. Oh, we've turned it into a holiday. I was like, what do you mean you've turned it into a holiday?
I would be shocked if I hadn't spent about 4 years on and off in Asia now, because I went to Bangkok Music City, and like, one of the things that I was like, I couldn't believe it. And no, like, this is nothing against those guys at all. But when the panels were on, the only people that were at the panels were the delegates. Like, there wasn't a band member to be seen, you know? And, and I mean, and the thing is, I think it's just got to do with like, I think, well, because let's be honest about it. A lot of artists in Asia, they think like kind of the whole entire point of being in a band is to play at South by Southwest. I mean, that's serious. Like, it's almost like that's the destination, you know, like that's the end game. Like, hey, if we play at South by Southwest, we're famous. And it's like, well, no, you're not, you know, but it's like, but to help them try to understand that it's a Herculean task, you know? So, and then the more conferences, like when I was in Japan, you know, when I was in different countries in Asia and there's these events, like the artists just aren't showing up, you know, even in Taiwan at the Golden Melody Awards, when they're doing the presentations of all the companies, there's just no artists.
They're not sure.
You know, so, and I think that's just something cultural because we just have to you know, in the West, this has been going on for a lot longer and it's kind of become institutionalized almost, right? Where bands have a real hard, like they're really hard pressed and saying like, hey, if you don't meet these people, you're not going to get opportunity. Now, the other thing in Asia I find is also it's a lot more business orientated. So the thing is like even independent bands have managers, you know, like you'll never see that in Canada, United States. Like that's like, it's like, what? Like, how many shows you guys played? Oh, you know, two or one, you know, one or two. And it's like, you have a manager? Like what? I don't get it, you know, but so that's another really different thing here, right? Like it's like,
yeah, you're right. But they also deem it as a level of success, right? Oh, we have a manager now, we're under management. And of course it's like anything, right? Depends how good that manager is, and what band doesn't realize is your band is now based on the relationship that this manager has with other people, not your band, right? The dynamics changes, right? So because some managers are dicks, right? Some are brilliant, some are so good that you're willing to give the bands on their books more opportunities just because they're so easy to work with. Do you know what I mean?
I think you bring up a really good point there that I haven't really explored much with a lot of other people, but I mean, let's talk about that for a second. Like the music industry really is relationships, right? Like you've got to, you can be a super good band, but you got to be able to get along with people too. You know, that's one of the, it's almost like your relationships might play more of a role for you than maybe even like how good you are as a musician or, you know, I mean, or the people representing you, like they just have to have this kind of like, you know, charisma about them that they can open doors for you. I mean, it's really, it's really become a really psychologically, you know, complicated industry. I mean, the more and more I dove into it now, being a conference coordinator where I'm, you know, bringing people together, like I really see the psychodynamic. I'm just like, it is clicky and it is, you know, it is like really psychological. And so I think like, do you find that in your scene as well? Like, do you find like, it's like kind of like a popularity contest?
In some ways. As I was listening to you, I was thinking about this band, I won't say their name, but they were destined to be big. But then they got this manager. I never asked them. I said, why is she your manager? And she was so difficult to deal with that it was easier just to, even though they were a fantastic band, I love them. I love this band. But because I had to deal with this pain in the butt woman, I chose not to deal with her. Life's too short to deal with people who make your life a misery, right?
Yeah.
And then later on, I remember saying to the lead singer, I said, do you still love that person? He went, oh no, she was a nightmare. Right. And that band by that point had split up, right? Which was a real disappointment. Like they could have been something great, but this person destroyed them in many ways. And I'm thinking, you just don't hand over the management of your band to any old person.
Hand over the keys, new Ferrari. It's like, here you go.
Yeah. The manager, like your sound person, should be like an extension of your band. They believe in you and they like you, right?
I absolutely agree.
And what people do is choose a business person.
Right.
Here, they do here.
Well, yeah. We got to be honest, like there is cultural differences. And I mean, a lot of things, like I'll even tell you for sure, like, I mean, I've had very few Asian people in bands I played in when I was younger. And it was mostly due to the fact, like, you know, they would be in the schools, like in the, you know, the, you know, in the music schools and these kind of things. but to be playing bars and to be like, you know, like, you know, touring around and like, you know, sleeping in vans and stuff like that. I found it like, it's like their parents just wouldn't let them. You know what I mean? Like their parents were like, no, like, you're not doing this. You're going to be a doctor. Like, forget it. You know? And if you're going to be a musician, you're going to be a classical musician, you know, like you're going to be, you know, you're going to be virtuoso, concerto, whatever, yada, yada. And there was nothing to do with pop music or rock music. So I think the thing is too, is that, and I'm not trying to say about westernization or anything, but I'm just trying to say that I think there's just the cultural differences are so dynamic that maybe it's just time. Like, have you seen this? You must have seen this, what I'm talking about. Like, this can't sound like it's new news. Like, do you have to deal with this a lot? Do you have to contend with like band, you know, forming these bands are formed and then it's like, oh yeah, well, I can't do this anymore because I have to go be a lawyer or something. Like, do you see that a lot? Or
that's a cool question. Actually, I've played in bands with more lawyers than any other profession, but that's a side
what?
But what I mean there's a really cool local band called Nowhere Boys, right? And what they do is they one of the members plays violin and piano or keyboards, right? And they are infusing, because you know, it's this like, you know, how do I say it? In Hong Kong, it's like almost every kid has like piano or violin lessons or even both growing up. Yet when they become older, it's like, you're not going to do music, are you? You're going to be a lawyer or a doctor. And it's like, well, why did you force them to learn the piano and violin if they're not allowed to actually express themselves through it?
Right.
And it's nice to see someone like Nowhere Boys. They sing in Cantonese. They write their own music and they incorporate some of this into their music. It makes it really dynamic. They're a really, really good band. So it's nice to see actually that it's changing. People will do music, will chase it passionately as a hobby. Yeah. As a hobby. People still think it's for me, it's like, you know, people, you can't make money from music. I always think if you choose to make that your belief, then that will serve you and become true. It's you know, you have to define what it is that you want to do and then think a little bit out the box and try and go for it. Like, because for example, like I'm a promoter and I work with mostly indie bands. And it's like, not that I'm making money, but I shouldn't say that, I'm just joking. But it makes it really, you know, when you're in the scene, you know the scene, you know the bands, you know the people, you know you know, it's really easy to put shows together and, you know, serve corporate clients with the kind of music or bands that they want as well. I mean, it took a bit of while for me to figure it out as well. But I do see other musicians being successful. They might have, you know, they don't have just one band. They have a few bands that do different styles and different things, but they actually, and perhaps they supplement with teaching or whatever, but they choose to do that and they are making their livelihood from music. Right. So right. I think it's a mindset and I think it's slowly changing. It's I think it's universal though. I was reading something printed in the States where it was about the if you're a creative, like if you're in arts or music, you expect to have a lower salary, right? And whenever you expect something, the universe gives you what you expect, right? Doesn't it?
Well, maybe. I mean, no definitives there for sure, but
yeah, I know what you're saying.
I mean, it's kind of across the board. Like, don't like, let's not, you know, let's not really exaggerate it because my parents are blue collar workers, but they were absolutely against me being a musician. You know, like they're like, go be a welder, like go get a trade, you know, like go be a,
wow.
You know, they wanted me to have some sort of solid income and then, you know, quote unquote
hobby.
Quote, yeah,
hobby.
Exactly. Then you can go have fun. And I just, that was kind of the reason why I just said, like, you know, I just said, like, I just threw my life into music. Absolutely. Cause it was so much of a revolt, you know, and a, And I mean, it wasn't again, it wasn't to disrespect my parents, but it was just to kind of live my own life, you know? And by the time I got older, I did transition into the business side of it and absolutely stopped playing music. And that's only because I found the psychological part of the business so much more interesting for me personally, you know, but I miss touring. I miss all that stuff, but I find the communicating and the plan building and like, I just seeing it from a tour, like I was touring all over the world doing all these things. And then going to the business side, I just started seeing how little the business people actually knew about what was actually going on in the music industry. You know, I was like, what? You know, so I started getting this new passion.
Oh, true.
Yeah, I want to redo it. Okay, so we're gonna wrap this up here. Tell me about what's coming in the future for undergroundhk.com. What's going on with you guys? Post pandemic, what are you planning for? Any plans in the works? And what would you like what are some of your challenges and what's coming in the future in the, you know, ahead? And you can kind of just freestyle it from there.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Next month, July on the 17th, we're going to have our 17-year anniversary party. Which
congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Only our second show this year. We had our Wild Boar Music Festival in March this year. That was in a COVID responsible outdoor venue, which was fun, which was really fun. The government have just allowed literally today live music back in bars and clubs. So it'll be in a bar next month. The challenges at the moment is that we need band members to be vaccinated, people working on the event to be vaccinated. So that's a challenge. And then looking forward, hopefully I can put some shows on, but you just don't know with COVID. The last two times live music was allowed in bars and clubs, it was 3 weeks each time with months in between of no live music allowed. So it was kind of a nightmare. So we don't know how long this will last, but we'll make the most of it. And then next year, I'm going to do my Mellow Yellow Music Festival again. I was going to do it in July this year, but it just didn't happen. And then probably Wild Boar again next year and do some bigger events. Definitely want to keep doing shows. Who knows about post-pandemic, what the travel will be like, but hopefully we can do more shows. In the past, we were doing nearly one a month ourselves, and then I would work on other people's shows and help other people's festivals, right? I generally worked on non-music festivals like beer festivals and other things. Yeah. So, but you know, all of that stopped because before COVID, we also had social unrest here in Hong Kong, but we won't dive into that. But that affected music in 2019. So effectively it's been 2 years that the scene has been affected.
Okay.
Here.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm really interested when this, you know, post pandemic. I mean, there is touring in the States now. There are festivals in the States. Europe is going to be opening at the end of August. I still have a really great interest in kind of what you're doing and to kind of experience it myself. So I'm definitely looking forward to coming over and checking out some events you're doing and stuff, and definitely want to just kind of, you know, feel that vibe of what's going on in Hong Kong musically and stuff, because I mean, it is a really distinct place with character and such. And I think it's probably one of the coolest places that people can visit, because it's kind of it's just so much like, if like, I don't know, like a couple cities had a baby together and that would be Hong Kong. Like it's just, there's different elements of different places in the world there, you know? And that's what I kind of found like the most, it has a character to it, is what I'm trying to say. So, but yeah, thanks, Chris. I mean, it was really nice to talk to you, and I look forward to seeing what's going to happen in the future. And I hope you guys stay safe and take care. And thanks a lot for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks so much. And you take care and you stay safe and healthy too. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, cheers.
Bye.